Live from the heart of Los Angeles, this is the online edition of the Life Changes Show.
Look at the bright lights. Look at the bright lights.
With tonight's guest, personal growth strategist and author of Build Your Village, Florence Ann Romano.
Look at the night sky.
And performance guest, Sage. I am Mark Leger, and now our host, the MC, the master of change, Filippo Voltaggio.
I am looking forward to talking about family and friends and community today with our guest. And as I was reflecting on this show and speaking with our guest prior to the show, I was reflecting on how, as an Italian American, and our guest is an Italian American as well, that at least in previous generations, Italian babies and Italian American babies, or actually Italian anything throughout the world, have instant family, or had at least, had instant family, instant family, extended family, instant friends, instant community. And with that came usually automatic religion, which also came with community, which came with holidays and festivals, which came with events. And so parties and gatherings and groups and all of this, a lot of us might have taken for granted. And myself as well. I don't know if I took it for granted or I just never really thought about it, except actually when at school kids would say they did such and such for the holiday and they were just by themselves or with their parents by themselves. And that was very foreign to me because it was always family and extended family and friends and community, etc. So one of the things I was thinking about is as I grew older and these people passed, some of them, and some of them moved away and all of that. And I went to college and that kind of thing is that there was less and less of that. And though I never really had the kind of community and friends that I felt I could talk to, and I felt that I had a difficult childhood, but I think it would have been a lot more difficult if there was nobody. And even if I couldn't feel that there were certain things that I could talk to them about, at least they were there. And so as I am now in my older years, I look at the family and friends and community that I have cultivated. And I've noticed it's kind of uncanny that some by osmosis, I guess, I don't know how to say it, just by chance in a sense, but maybe because it was part of my DNA that I know what it feels like to have somebody that feels like that person used to feel in my life and that felt good, or to have somebody who reminds me of somebody that feels good. And so I talk about this a lot with my clients and in workshops where I say, let's bring those people, those energies that into our life if it serves us, because I believe it does. Now, I can speak more about this, so much more. It's a subject I am excited about, but I know Mark's going to have something to add, and our guest is all on this when we get to that in just a moment.
You know, it's like good characters in a storyline in a movie or a stage play. I look back and I think about how I had some really good characters, and holidays wouldn't be the same if I couldn't still hear and smell Uncle Mikey over in the corner smoking like a chimney, and plenty of other characters that were there for the holidays and added to the mystique of togetherness.
I laughed because you said smell and I wasn't sure where you were going with that, but he smoked. I get it. So yes, agreed. So and beyond the holidays, every single day of our lives, as this is what this is about. So the title of our episode is Build Your Village, Finding Joy and Community in Every Stage of Life, which is the title of our guest book, who is a personal growth strategist and the author of this beautiful book. Welcome to the show, Florence Ann Romano.
I am so happy to be here. And as you both were talking, I was sent back in time too about the characters at my Christmas table and the characters I just saw last week at Sunday dinner. So I hear you. I know exactly how it goes.
Right. And the beauty of it is that at this stage of our lives, we get to pick the characters, like Mark was saying, you know, and I was saying, we get to pick. So let's start. So did you have a similar background? So that was part of your DNA too, right?
You mentioned before, as an Italian American, yes. You know, I also grew up in a multi-generational home. My mom's parents, my Nana and Papa, they lived with me, and it was fabulous. I mean, it was the house that you wanted to be in. It was loud and exciting, and there was food every 2 feet, and there was always something going on. And I'm the oldest of four children, and my cousins were my first best friends. There was a sleepover every week. You know, I was born into a beautiful little ecosystem, and I'm very lucky that I still have these relationships with my cousins as cousins as an adult. But to your point, you get to pick and choose as you get older how you nurture those relationships, and also whether or not some of those relationships continue on. You get to make those choices because life gets more complicated as we get older, and you start to see who people become, and your lives can go in different directions, and you have to allow people to become who they are becoming. I'm very lucky that to have grown up with such a solid foundation of what community was and is.
So your book is it's Build Your Village, Finding Joy and Community in Every Stage of Life. So what state, like, how is it different in the stages of life?
Well, you know, I think oftentimes we're either born into it, or, you know, we create it kind of just as life goes on. It just kind of happens to form one way or another, that community that we have. Maybe it's because we moved to a city, or we live in a certain area where your neighbors become a part of your life, whatever it may be. But it's not as easy to make friends as we get older, especially as you get out of school, or, you know, you're not in the workforce maybe like you used to. Look at COVID. I mean, everyone went hybrid or even just totally remote, and all of a sudden there wasn't coworkers the way that you had before, where you had those daily relationships. And I always go back to really the reason I wrote the book. And during COVID, you know, we saw our support systems, we saw people be ripped away from us. And then it was time for us to go back to some sort of normalcy, to go back to connecting socially. And people were like, you know what? I don't think I know how to do this. And I don't even think it's not even that I don't know how. Maybe I don't want to do it. I think Netflix and yoga pants are made way more interesting than actually having to go meet someone for coffee or have dinner with someone in person. And that's what started me really thinking about what does community mean, and how do we have an active and intentional participation in that? Because we're going through a recession right now, and I guess you could say many different ways if we're going to, you know, say that, but a recession in terms of friendship is what I'm getting at. And I think the reason for that is because people are not, like I said, being intentional about the human connection anymore. We've gotten a little lazy.
Wow. And so in the stages, I'm thinking, like, if we're born into it, that's the child, well, or not, that's the child stage. And there's the teenage stage and the young adult stage. And it's interesting because you mentioned then if we're going to work and we're meeting people, or if we're going to school and we're meeting people. So yeah, before we talk about when we're older, let's talk about when we're younger, because this is especially important in the lives of teenagers right now, right?
Well, let's focus on teenagers specifically, because gosh, I could go back to being 14 right now. I mean, those are those things that stick out in your brain about what happened during high school and those very formative years. And I, you know, my mom was so good about making sure she was involved in how I was selecting friends, not in a helicopter sort of way. But she always would talk to me about why I liked a certain person, like why I was friends with the person. I had no idea what was going on back then. I'm like, God, she's so nosy. Why does she want to know? And it was such a good exercise to actually talk about like why I'm friends with someone, like what was I learning from them? It was kind of a really mature conversation. I don't realize I was having it back then. But teenagers, those 4 years between 14 and 18, so much change is going on. And all any teenager wants is to fit in. That is all you want in high school. And it's very difficult because you're trying to figure out who you are, your personality, what interests you, what your passions are. You're trying to pay attention to school and extracurriculars and maybe exploring having crushes or, you know, on people or, you know, dating for the first time. There's a lot being thrown at you at that age. And one thing I have found and have had conversations with many people about this is after those high school years and you go to college, one of the most common things I've heard people say to me, and I have said it myself, is I can't wait to go to college. Or if you don't go to college, start that next chapter of your life at 18, because I want to reinvent myself. I feel like I'm going to get a chance to do it over again and figure it out. That to me speaks volumes about the evolution of a person and what you're learning during those years about who you are and also who you want to be and who you want to surround yourself with. Yes, no, maybe. I don't know. I mean, it's a lot.
There's so much there. There's
a lot to unpack. I know.
But since we're focusing on teenagers, this was interesting to me, and it makes so much sense in your book. You talk about primary community and secondary community, or how do you say
correct.
It?
Correct. Okay. Yep, primary and secondary villages. Yes.
So talk to us about that. Like, what's the difference and why are they each important?
Well, I laugh because I don't ever want people to think that this is such a heavy lift. You know, we've all read those like personal growth books where you're like, I'm not doing any of this. This is way too hard. I don't have time for this. I want people to actually realize that a lot of this is low-hanging fruit. It's right there at your fingertips. You're probably doing a lot of these things already. You're just not identifying it. So a primary village, those are your best friends. That's your family. Those are the people that are probably a very active part of your life daily, weekly. And then the secondary village to me is actually very interesting because I don't think people think about it and it having as much of a vital role. And I'm going to use a funny example. You go every day to the same coffee shop and get that same coffee on your way to work or whatever it is that you're doing, or if your mom doing carpool and you're going to that same coffee shop and you have that barista that you see every single day and you probably know everything about her, what her birthday is, her, you know, rising sign, you know, how many kids she has or her goals, life dreams, because you talk to this person and see this person daily. They actually are a part of your secondary village. It's not a person that you're depending on in this very you know, I guess you could say significant way, like they are, you know, they're the nanny. Let's say they're not the nanny necessarily to your children. And they're a part of your life in that way where you count on them to take care of your children, but you count on them for every day for that cup of coffee and that exchange that you have. So it's just about looking at the people in your life and realizing, who am I interacting with? Who am I, you know, exchanging energy with? Who am I getting to know? Who am I coming into contact with? What do I feel when I'm actually with those people? You know, what does it bring me joy? Does it fill up my cup? Not to use a pun, but you have to look and see that different people in your life are there and serve for all different reasons, and it does not devalue any of those people, depending on the quantity or the intensity of those relationships. I think we tend to get into trouble when we think that if it's not this enormous quantity of time that this person spends with us, or, you know, fills us up in this enormous quantitative way, that relationship doesn't have value. And that's not how we should be measuring these relationships.
Mm-hmm. You know, it's interesting, speaking about the barista, that person is part of your community, we may be also part of theirs.
Yes, 100%. You're hitting on something very important. This book is not meant to just be me, me, me. You know, who am I of these six villagers? What do I need in order to build my villages? It's about you also figuring out who am I to other people? And what can I work on myself in order to be a better villager, to be a better support system for whatever role it is that I play in those other villages? And you don't know how something will change someone else. You don't know what how your words will affect. You'll love this being Italian too. I can't say it in Italian, so if you can, please do. But there's a phrase that says, the tongue doesn't have bones, but yes, it can break bones, right?
Yes.
Okay. So you, right? And that's a cautionary tale to watch what you say, because your words can, you know, have a lot of weight and they can hurt and they can cut. But the same goes in the positive. You know, the things you say, my great grandmother would always say, it costs nothing for you to make someone smile. It costs nothing for you to make someone's day. Tell them they look beautiful or give them a cookie or whatever it is that you're going to make them feel special. You know, that's all part of this. And that maybe is the smallest moment. You may think it's the smallest moment in the world, buying a cup of coffee for the person behind you while you're in line at Dunkin' Donuts or whatever it is. But you don't know what's going on in that person's life. You don't know maybe what just happened in their life and how that moment of kindness that you showed them maybe showed them a glimmer of humanity that they needed that day in order to keep going.
So because you asked in a Sicilian, my mother would say it, a lingua naviosa ma borumbrilosa. All right,
oh,
there you go.
See, you say it beautifully. I can never.
And
thank you.
and would it require or does it require somebody to know who they are in order to know what they bring to a community, to their village, mm-hmm. to their tribe, mm-hmm. to their family?
You're hitting on something I talk about very often, which is know thyself. And I'm not saying we need to be fully formed and perfect people. We're never going to be perfect and we're always going to be learning. We should always be the student. But you do have to have some level of self-awareness. And that also means being comfortable with being uncomfortable. And that's part of this work too, is realizing that there is room to learn, that we have things that we can improve on, that maybe we're part of the problem, not to quote a Taylor Swift song, but like, hi, I'm the problem, it's me sort of thing. Like that's probably part of it sometimes when we do this work on figuring out, why am I feeling this way? Why am I feeling isolated? Why am I feeling lonely? Why am I feeling disconnected from life? And you sometimes have to figure out, well, what's my participation in this feeling? Because I always say to people, I can give you the directions to the village. That's what the book is about. It's the roadmap, but I can't make you get in the car and drive there. Like, I'm giving you the directions, but you need to get in the car and drive. And so figuring out what that means to you, getting there, driving there, you know, actually taking the reins and figuring it out and making it happen. Like anything in life, until you decide it's important, until you decide you want to change or you want it to change, whatever it is, it won't.
Mm. You know, I've been shortening the title of your book, actually. So the full title is Build Your Village, A Guide to Finding Joy and Community in Every Stage of Life. Of course, we are speaking with Florence Ann Romano. And if you want to learn more, well, the book is available where books are sold. We have a link to the Amazon page on our website for Florence Ann. But you could go directly to Florence Ann's website, Instagram. You can find her mainly at Florence Ann Romano, FlorenceAnnRomano.com, and just put in Florence Ann Romano and you'll find her. Otherwise, go to LifeChangesShow.com and see all her links in the bio. And a really great video, actually. I didn't see this online. Thank you for sending it to us. And we went ahead and posted it with you on your TV show and all the fun, some of the other fun stuff you've done. So we'll talk a little bit more with Florence Ann. And when we come back, we'll talk about the types of villagers that we need for a fully functioning village or community. And then we'll also talk about a tool or two that we could use to, actually, we've already heard that we could use to bring more villagers to our village. And a little later on, we're going to have our Ask Dorothy segment. And then we will be joined by musician Sage, who will be performing live during our performance segment, all on the Life Changes Show Online Edition, right after this.
Want to connect with amazing people who are committed to making a difference? From the Heart Tribe is a platform, community, and movement with the purpose of bringing like-minded humans together to help animals and the environment in order to gain a stronger connection and understanding of the world around us. They're dedicated to effectuating positive change by empowering individuals to organize meaningful and engaging experiences that build compassion for animals and the natural environment. Their founders and members' passion is to inspire others to actively get involved in their homes, their communities, and the world, to raise awareness about the issues we face, and most of all, to be part of the solution. Through their efforts, they have also accomplished some amazing and tangible achievements. Their Pickup for Paradise beach cleanups have collected over 50,000 pieces of foreign debris. And also, thanks to animal rescue and recovery volunteers, over 30% of the volunteers have become vegan or reduced their meat intake. Daily habits make a big difference. Please join any of their upcoming events by going to fthtt.org and signing up for their newsletter. You can also follow on Instagram and Facebook at From the Heart Tribe. Have you felt inspired to meditate but you just can't? Do you suffer from anxiety but fidget toys just make you more fidgety? Want to replace negative self-talk in your head that keeps bringing you down? Introducing the latest self-help solution, Phi Beads. Transformational beaded jewelry inspired by ancient wisdom, science, math, and psychology. All Phi beads are designed to incorporate the powerful Fibonacci sequence, nature's mathematical formula that has shaped our existence from the beginning of time. The Fibonacci sequence, also known as the golden mean or the golden ratio, is recognized by our conscious and unconscious mind and resonates as order out of chaos, like we see in plants, flowers, seashells, ocean waves, the pyramids, and in our own body. Not only beautiful, they feel good to wear. Phi beads can help anchor tranquility, positivity, focus, and structure in your life by doing the Phi meditation. Phi meditation helps you harness the power of I am, or intention, affirmation, and manifestation. Affirm the life you want. Get your set of Phi beads at phibeads.com. That's Phi, P-H-I, beads.com.
You are listening to A Conversation That Matters on The Life Changes Show. Broadcasting live from the heart of Los Angeles every Monday night at 7 p.m. Pacific Time. Share the journey with us at lifechangesshow.com and follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Life Changes Show.
Well, we're back and we're speaking with Florence Ann Romano, who's a personal growth strategist, an author, a philanthropist, a businesswoman, and as you've already noted, a person with a sparkling personality. Thank you, Florence Ann, for what you've shared so far. This concept that you bring of the, is it like six archetypes of villagers yes. that you want? Mm-hmm.
Yes, I wanted something that people could relate to, that was tangible. You could run your fingers through it. Nothing worse than people talking in generalities and you're like, I'm not really sure what to do with that, but I guess I'll try to figure that out on my own. I wanted people to really be able to identify with something. So the six are accepting, dependable, communicator, cheerleader, organizer, and healer. And each of those have a different definition. We can get into that a little bit. But before I even do that, every time I say those six to anyone, people automatically start casting role, their people in their lives into those roles. And that's exactly what I want. Because that's what this work is really about. And I think Mark said it before, you know, who are the characters? That's exactly true. Mm. The main characters in your life, you're casting it like a movie or a play. That's what these six are supposed to do. Now, you can have more than one accepting villager. You also are looking at who you are of these six people in other people's villages. So there's a lot of different ways you're going to kind of peel back this onion. But as you start looking at your life, kind of the landscape of it currently, you start to realize where the voids are. You're like, all right, maybe I have four out of the six, or maybe I feel like I have none, or maybe I have all six, but why do I still feel so alone and so disconnected? And maybe that's because you have the wrong people sitting in the wrong seats. Maybe you want someone to be your accepting villager, but they're really the healer. I need to shuffle the deck a bit. So yes, it is to be used kind of like archetypes in that situation to help you figure out how you're actually constructing this community.
And we ourselves can be any of the six, and we can be different to different people, right?
Absolutely. And I always say to my friends, you know, and when the book came out, I kind of was very hush-hush about like who the six were. I kind of wanted to wait till the book came out to have these big conversations. I'm telling you, I would be in group chats with so many friends saying, okay, we're all sitting around having a glass of wine right now, and everyone's trying to figure out who they think they are to you. If they think they're your accepting person, if they're your dependable person. And it was so funny to hear people's feedback about what they thought they were to me, and actually in my opinion, what they really were. And that also was a really cool moment, because for people who thought maybe that they weren't, let's use the healer, for example. I always say the healer is the person who's really your North Star. They're the person who's going to walk with you through it, right next to you. No matter what the it is in life, they are there, not to fix you, not to fix the problem, just to be with you through it. And I was saying to one of my friends that she actually really is an incredible healer in my life. And she was all, you know, choked up about it, because she said she never would have thought that she ever brought that to the table, that I was that to her, but she never thought she could be that to me. So it's really amazing to watch people start to have do that work on themselves, have that self-awareness, but also realize, and I always say this too, wouldn't it be great, instead of, you know, your New Year's resolution being, oh, I'm going to go to the gym 6 days a week, maybe it's going to be, I'm going to choose one of these six villagers that I'm interested in. Maybe I want to be a better cheerleader villager. And I'm going to work on that this year. That would be pretty cool.
So for people who are in relationships, I can almost hear somebody in the relationship saying, I'm all of that to you, and that's what I'm supposed to be. So you can't have that in anybody else.
Oh, well, that's just so unfair. Whoever's saying that, I think you should get out of that relationship. that's probably my advice there. You know, no one should be everything to you. That's so unfair to put that on someone. You know, that's why you have different people in your life, is so you can share the load. If you're saying that, okay, my spouse or my significant other, whoever, you know, they're all six to me, and so I don't need anyone else. Okay, they can be all six to you, but to say that then you're done, you don't need any other human connection, you don't need any other support, you don't need any other sisterhood or brotherhood of any kind, you're really cheating yourself, because that's not what we're supposed to do as human beings. As human beings, we are supposed to connect, and we are supposed to have those social relationships, those meaningful relationships. One of my best friends, her husband jokingly says to me, but there's always truth in every joke, he'll always say to me, listen, you handle the 25% of her that I can't, so I need you around. And so I always laugh. And I said, sometimes that percentage seems to get a little bigger as we go year to year. We've been friends for like 20 years. I think it's okay for us to realize that just because it's your husband, your wife, your spouse, your significant other, if they're not all six of those things to you, that's okay. That's why you are able to have other relationships. I'm not saying romantic relationships, you know, of course, continue to be faithful to your spouse or whomever. It's that you just should never expect to put that burden on one person to be everything. It's just not right.
So you actually touched on what was going to be my next question, is do we need to ask permission of the people, because we don't want to rely on somebody for this if that's not how they want to be looked at or relied upon?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It's an interesting conversation, I think, now, since we're actually putting a definition to these archetypes, like you said. I think when you start forming relationships or friendships with people, the natural instinct of those people comes out. You start to see the flavors, you know, the 31 or whatever that, you know, Baskin Robbins 31 flavors is of that person. And there's that saying, when someone shows you who they are, believe them. Mm-hmm. And so there's only one way you're going to be able to fulfill that discovery is by actually getting to know that person. And you have to meet someone where they are, not where you want them to be. So yes, you can have a conversation with someone about you casting them in their role, in that role, but you probably don't need to have that conversation if you are getting to know that person in the right way. You're going to naturally be able to categorize that person and hopefully then be able to do the same thing for you.
Okay. So before we end our conversation, how about a tool that we could use? You've given so many throughout for those that could grasp sure. what you were saying. So, but is there like something, well, New Year's resolution was one of them.
I do have one for anyone out there that is struggling with this at the moment. They don't know how to take that first step. They know that they want to start building a village or they want to start shuffling the deck or cleaning house or whatever it might be. Philanthropy. Philanthropy for me has always been the common denominator for relationship building. It's a great way for you to figure out what's meaningful to me, what's a passion for me, how do I want to give back? And then hopefully you're going to pick an organization or whatever it might be that you're going to get involved in where you're going to meet like-minded people and they have a similar value system to you. And you're going to start to form relationships with those people based on a similar interest. And it's kind of two birds with one stone. You get to do something that turns it forward, that pays it forward, but you're also going to open up that Rolodex, that demographic for you, where you're going to start to meet new people. So when in doubt, philanthropy is usually a great way, a great tool to be the first step in building that village.
Oh, that's awesome. And philanthropy can be money. It can also be time and
yes.
Creativity or talent.
Absolutely. So many different ways to do it. And again, it's not writing $1 million check to a children's hospital. Of course, that's wonderful. But there's so many different ways to lend your heart. And it's a beautiful way also for you to continue doing that self-discovery as well. And you're going to meet like-minded people that maybe share a passion for the same cause. But it's also going to introduce you to different people that maybe are from all sorts of different backgrounds. And you're going to get to experience that diversity too. You know, it's no fun if we just surround ourselves with people that are just like us. That's not the point. You know, you want to find people in your lives that are going to challenge you in the right ways, that are going to open your eyes, that are going to educate you. That's a great way to do it, because generally an organization, some type of philanthropy, you're going to meet all different people from all different walks of life. So it opens up the doors for you.
So Build Your Village, A Guide to Finding Joy and Community in Every Stage of Life is the book that we've been talking about with Florence Ann Romano. And you can go to florenceannromano.com. You can find the book where books are sold, or you can go to Life Changes Show .com and find Instagram, Facebook, Pinterest, all kinds of things on Florence Ann Romano, and a link to the book as well. So Florence Ann, before we bring this great conversation to a close for today, at least, I feel like I have to meet you, by the way. I know you're in Chicago.
I would love to. A fellow Paisan. Like I can't say no to a fellow Paisan. No way.
Right? We have to eat something together. I don't know.
Exactly. That's right. But that's the way you do it.
What do we say to people? Again, the tool of philanthropy, I really like that. What do we say to people who have young adults at home, teenagers? What do we say to them to help them? Like, you gave some clues about your mom and your life, but mm-hmm. Anything else we could offer them a thought?
Yes. Them? I think the thing that stuck out for me growing up was that my mom was a woman that never made me feel like any question was stupid, that any feeling was stupid. And I could go to her. And the most important part of that is also not feeling embarrassed, because I think when we're growing up, especially those teenage years, we're very, very self-conscious about how we look or how we feel or how we act or things like that. And you don't want to be embarrassed by what you're going through or how you're feeling. And I think with mental health being what it is in this country now, we need to make sure there are more places for children to go, and young adults rather, to go where they feel like they're going to be seen, heard, and understood. And if that's not your family, because not everyone, again, is born into what maybe I was and had that safe place, then making sure that you know you're worth it to find that help. And maybe as the parent, you're sitting there thinking, I wish I could be that, but I'm just not capable. Then what you can do to help is find the resources to do that for your child. And you don't have to be that person. You don't have to be the answer. Maybe it's having a therapist. Maybe it's joining some sort of organization or group that is supportive. But just making sure you are aware of what your child needs and how you can support them, and knowing that you don't have to have all the answers, but you can help them find the answers.
Florence Ann Romano, mille grazie. Thank you so much for what you brought and what you do. It's been such a pleasure. Oh,
thank you. Molti baci. Have a beautiful evening. And I have enjoyed this so much. Thank you for a beautiful conversation. It was very joyful.
Thank you, Florence Ann. Likewise. And with that, we have our Ask Dorothy segment.
Dear Dorothy, this is Janice from Los Angeles. I am ready for my soulmate, and I'm finding myself slipping into depression and crying spells because he just has not shown up. My ex-husband declares he is my soulmate and just cannot hear me when I say no to a future with him. I truly believe that there is one perfect man for me, and I just need him in my life now. Ever since I was a small child, I have felt that there is a wonderful man who will love me the way I deserve to be loved. And when he shows up, I will be blissfully happy as I am meant to be. How can I find this perfect man?
Dear Janice, believing that a perfect man will bring you happiness is more than likely what is keeping your divine compliment away from you. I use the phrase divine complement instead of soulmate because we have lots of soulmates and only one or two beings who are perfect for us in a long-term, mutually beneficial relationship. Happiness is an inside job, and humanity has been taught to look outside of ourselves for happiness. Your divine complement is already happy. And when you choose to love and approve of yourself in your single state, you can achieve the necessary state of happiness that is needed to bring you and your divine complement together. I believe it would be good for you to search the internet for helpful advice in finding the love of your life. MindBodyGreen.com is a great place to start, and there are other good choices for valuable clues at powerofpositivity.com and even wikihow.com and many more. The internet uses the phrase soulmate instead of divine complement, so please research how to find my soulmate. I look forward to hearing of your progress as you choose to focus on finding happiness within before looking for your man.
Thank you, Dorothy. And if you have a question for Dorothy, please write her at askdorothy@lifechangesshow.com.
And we'll be right back with our performance guest, Sage, here on the Life Changes Show Online Edition right after this.
The Little Dog That Could is the fantastically true story of a man and a little dog that came into his life as his mentor to help him understand the world beyond his human senses and to experience life, love, and healing beyond his human understanding. Best-selling author Filippo Voltaggio, who currently hosts the highly regarded Life Changes show, is an internationally known singer, speaker, and life coach. Filippo offers up his own story, how one little surprise package in fur and four legs transformed his life unexpectedly forever and furthered his path of self-discovery. In The Little Dog That Could, Filippo brings to life the meaning of the adage, when the student is ready, the teacher appears. Through the reading of this book, you will experience the journey of real miracles that transcend time, space, and logic while gaining practical tools that will help you navigate your way. The Little Dog That Could is available through Amazon and Barnes & Noble. For more information, visit thelittledogthatcould.com. That's thelittledogthatcould.com.
There are self-help seminars costing thousands of dollars guaranteeing miraculous transformations. There are compelling speakers and life-changing weekend experiences where you can walk on fire. They all deliver revelations that guarantee you'll come back for the more expensive revelations filled with even greater wonder next month on Fiji. We get addicted to positive, heartfelt, expensive theater. What we really need is a jumpstart, an awakening, someone who can give us a reminder that everything we need lies within. Through inspiration and practical knowledge, Dorothy Donahue helps people get grounded and motivated, inspired and energized. It's not just words and affirmations and the power of intention. It's a mindset brought about by a tangible, transcendental experience, an audio-visual, physical, spiritual experience that helps us realize we transform ourselves. We get tools to become the conscious co-creators of lives of unlimited potential. Find out more. Go to DorothyDonahue.com.
You are listening to A Conversation That Matters on The Life Changes Show. Broadcasting live from the heart of Los Angeles every Monday night at 7 p.m. Pacific Time. Share the journey with us at lifechangesshow.com and follow us on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at Life Changes Show.
We are back, and we are joined here on our performance segment by global artist, multi-instrumentalist, guitar and piano bass singer, songwriter, Sage. Welcome, Sage, to the Life Changes Show.
Thank you, Filippo. Thank you.
It's a pleasure having you on, and you have an interesting background with music, which it comes out in many different ways. Tell us about that.
So I play instrumental New Age piano. It leans towards the contemplative side. You could run a work session to it, a yoga class to it, or you could listen to it in concert. It could be background music, and or you could gazingly be attentive to it. I would describe it as New Age. It's not completely meditative. It can be a bit dramatic at some points, but I always aspire for it to be emotive and impassioned. And that's one of the facets of what I do.
And how did you start this facet of what you do?
I kept feeling as though I needed a piano in my life. I'd been playing guitar for about 8 years. And then I got the instrument and I just started playing it. And I got the melody that came out of me. And I kept churning and churning it over the years. And at a certain moment, I think I've put more time into it than perhaps any instrument that I've put my hands on. It's just been a process of self-discovery.
So what were your musical influences?
So growing up in a South Asian immigrant family, I was born in Kansas City. So on the VHSs, and back then on the audio tapes and whatnot, we listened to a lot of Hindi film music, what they call Bollywood. And it's pop music that has a very, very high standard of performance with a classical bent, but it's not classical. And very high caliber of musicianship and very melodic. Maybe not so much harmonic, but very melodic. And those melodies became part and parcel of me. And then also then growing up in the States and the Midwest and listening to hard rock and heavy rock, you know, Zeppelin and all those things, that's probably a huge part of my rhythmic undertone is classic rock, hard rock, and, you know, of course, the alt thing, new music and stuff like that. So it's a combination. We are what we've listened to.
Well, let's hear what this combination, along with everything else that you came into this world with and you've learned, and all the other influences you have created music, you are going to create music right on the show, right? What's this first piece we're going to experience?
Thank you. Yeah, so this is a piece. It's called Nova, and this will be largely improvisational. There's a core melody I like to bring in almost as a break from what's happening, and that is the one memorable part, if any, of the piece. And so it's largely improvisational in time, meter, and I know kind of where I'm going, but I don't quite plan or know how I will get there.
Exciting. Okay, well, we're going to get to hear this improvisational piece, Nova, by Sage, here live on the Life Changers Show.
Thank you. Thank you.
That was Sage's improvisation live on the Life Changes Show called Nova. I look forward to hearing that elsewhere at some point. And this obviously is not available yet, but lots of music is. So you can go to Spotify, and you could also go to Instagram. Sage, by the way, is spelled S-E-Y-J-E. So on Instagram, it's sage.music. What is it on Spotify, Sage?
On Spotify, the project name is The Quiet Space, and that's instrumental piano. And Sage, my name encompasses all the aspects of music, including that the piano, instrumental, and singer-songwriter guitar, and singer-songwriter piano. There's a lot of quiet space between the notes, so I thought it fitting to title the entirety of the instrumental piano The Quiet Space. Give it its own moniker, so to speak.
Thank you. I know we asked that we could hear two different pieces, and in order to do that, because of the time constraint, that the pieces had to be limited to a certain time. When you're improvising and you're having to think about the time and you're doing it live, does it not allow you to go where you might want to go, or are you able to incorporate it all?
So if I'm playing for, let's say, an hour and a half during a performance, I ease into it, and I know that, you know, eventually we'll get to highly melodic, juicy places. The fingers will just take me there, and it can be pure improvisation. It's easier that way. So for purposes of this, I chose that last piece with that core melody of... With that core melody, that one, you know, played a couple of times to give the listener a sense that this is where it can go, and the rest of it was actually surprisingly improvised more than I had planned, and but yeah, so I think it doesn't get as probably it doesn't get as what somebody might say as interesting as quick, you know, if it's during a longer set. So that might be the difference. And you're going to, it's more surprising, obviously, if it's longer. So it's you know, it's there's a difference for radio, and there's a difference for, you know, long performance.
When we talked about earlier what you like to write about, the answer actually surprised me. Can you tell us what the answer is? And I'm sure you know why it's a surprise.
So were we interested in instrumentally or vocally? I think instrumentally.
It was vocally, I think.
Vocally. Well, I'll go over, I'll go over instrumentally first. It ends up actually, sounds are largely inspired by nature. Instrumentally, there's a lot of influence in nature, and the drama of nature, and the passion of nature, and the quietness of nature, and the emotions that brings up. And vocally, instrumentally, it's interesting in that it hasn't seemed to be an intention. It just reflects the mood, because I work on the piano and things come up. And vocally, lyrically, it's largely been songs of inspiration. I would say the instrumental music can be inspiring as well, but songs of inspiration and praise of others. If stories of Americana, stories of the Great West, and, you know, without being too direct, you know, in a very metaphorical way, but very reflective, Americana, folk rock, acoustic rock. Music and lyrical and lyrics to go with that. So it's more story based, of course, lyrically, but it just comes up on the piano. It's very moody.
Excellent, thank you. Well, we're going to get to hear a second piece, and this piece is something that's already recorded, correct?
This is something that has been recorded for a while that's not released.
Oh.
And what I will do is is I'll play this and I'll lead it into an improvisation towards the end. And it will give the audience a chance to see what a more set piece might sound like, and then what a more who knows where this goes kind of improvisation happens for a moment. How about that?
I think that's great. So this is your life, correct?
This is your life, yes.
This is your life here with live with a sage on the Life Changes Show.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you, Sage. Sage.music on Instagram is where you could follow him, learn more about him. Again, Sage is spelled S-E-Y-J-E. And then on Spotify, look for The Quiet Space. Thank you so much for joining us and sharing your improvisations and your music with us, Sage.
A pleasure. Thank you.
Pleasure having you. And with that, with a big thank you to Sage and another big thank you to Florence and Romano. That is our show. On behalf of our executive producer, Dorothy Lee Donahue, and our executive producer and co-host, Mark Legere, I am your host, Filippo Voltaggio. reminding you that as your life changes, like ours surely did tonight, we're here for you. Ciao, everyone.
You have been listening to the Life Changes Show on the BBS Radio Network. Listen live every Monday night at 7 p.m. Pacific Time and visit us online at lifechangesnetwork.com, on Facebook at The Life Changes Show, and on Twitter at Life Changes Show. Join us again next week as we consciously explore and embrace the only constant, life changes. The Life Changes Network is an entertainment network. The views and opinions expressed are those of the guests and participants and do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of Life Changes.